Welcome to the Odyssey Podcasts. This is Jean Cavellos, Director of Odyssey. Odyssey is an intensive 6-week workshop for writers of fantasy, science fiction, and horror, whose work is approaching publication quality, and for published writers who want to improve their work. Odyssey is held each summer on the campus of St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire. Adult writers from all over the world apply. Only 16 are admitted. Top authors, editors, and agents serve as guest lecturers. For more information, visit www.odysseyworkshop.org. Podcast number 22 is an excerpt from Nancy Kress's lecture at Odyssey 2008 on writing in scenes. The text of this recording is copyright 2008 by Nancy Kress. The sound recording is copyright 2009 by Odyssey Writing Workshops.
When I started writing, I didn't have any idea that you were supposed to write stories in scenes. I would just start and the thing would just spill out of me, and none of them sold. The thing that made the single biggest difference for me between a saleable story and one that just sort of, that never went anywhere, was when I learned to think of a story in scenes. Not as the whole story, not as just letting it spew out, but as a definite scene, with each scene having its own purpose and its own orientation and its own shape. And I'm going to talk about the shape of a scene this morning. But before I do that, I want to back up a little bit and I want to talk about the tools that you have for writing anything, because this is going to tie in with our scenes. And you really only have 5. And in a way, you're lucky because you have 4 more than the playwright. All the playwright gets is dialogue. Well, they do get to specify stage directions and setting, but the director will ignore it all anyway, so it doesn't matter. You, however, have got 4 other modes of expression, narrative modes, in addition to dialogue. You have description. You have action, which essentially is description in motion. You have your character's thoughts that the playwright can't get on stage or the movie person can't done unless he does the awkward device of a voiceover. And you have exposition. Okay, just to refresh, what is exposition? It's when you're telling us the story instead of showing it. You're telling us what happened instead of showing it. And there are some times when exposition is good. You can't show everything. But exposition is when essentially you're telling us what's going on instead of showing us. Okay. What I learned when I turned my stories from non-saleable into saleable was that in most cases, and there are exceptions, there are exceptions both for specific scenes and there are exceptions for writers, and I want to come to that in a minute, but generally, dialogue should be at the heart of almost all scenes. Dialogue is the heart because dialogue is what dramatization is about, which is why we get the word drama from the playwright. Dramatization. The reader wants to be a fly on the wall. The reader wants to see this story as it unravels in front of them. They don't want to be told about important events that develop. So-and-so did such, and then he told his wife about it, and his wife said she wasn't happy. That's exposition. They want to see him say this to his wife. They want to see the gestures that he uses while he says it to his wife. They want to see her reaction. They want to hear her, oh my God, how could you be such a stupid fool? They want to see his reaction to being called a stupid fool. They want to hear his reply back. They want to be present. Drama is not the same as fiction, but it grew out of drama. Fiction grew out of drama because drama is the older form. We want to see the story, and that almost always means putting dialogue at the heart. Obviously, if it's an action scene and nobody's saying anything, then that's not going to be the case. And there are going to be some times where you do need to put an info dump, especially in science fiction. There are times when you have to give some background information. And it would be artificial to have one character explain to another how the faster-than-light drive works when the fact is they both already know how the faster-than-light drive works. Or one doesn't care. She just wants to get wherever she's going. So I'm not saying it's always dialogue. There are places when an info dump and an exposition and an expository lump are useful. Also for summarizing scenes that you don't want to fully dramatize. But generally, dialogue should be the heart of your scenes. And when I learned this, Again, as I said last night, what I'm giving you is what I learned, and you'll have to adapt it to whether it's useful to you. But when I started making dialogue, the heart of the scenes I wrote, my stories took a dramatic leap forward. Now, if you were a playwright, this is all you would have. And the actors and the director would have to infuse all the rest of the life into it. But either fortunately in that you have more tools, or unfortunately in that you get no help, depending on how you're looking at it, you're the one that has to infuse into it what the actors and what the director would put there. Because we want to be there. We want to be there as much as if it were a stage play, as much as if it were a movie. So I want you to turn over just the top of the four pieces of paper that I put in front of you. This is an argument, two people having an argument. Read through it, and then tell me what's going on here.
Where were you last night? Out with Jim and Ed. Oh, where did you go? To the casino. I thought we agreed. Never mind. No, go ahead. Say it. I'd rather not. Say it. All right. We agreed that you were going to stop gambling. I know, but I went, and I won.
Okay, what's the situation?
Someone has promised not to gamble, and they did.
Okay, and the other person is resisting, trying to get them to stop it. Okay. Everything that goes around your dialogue, I'm going to refer to as the surround. And it's the other four modes. It's the bits of description, it's the bits of thoughts that are in a character's mind, it's the bits of action, it's even the bits of exposition. And unlike when you just write dialogue straight, it has to be in somebody's point of view. You pick one point of view or another. So pick up the second paper that I gave you. Now you have surround around that exact same dialogue. Where were you last night? Same dialogue. Patty said quietly as Paul came into the kitchen. Okay, so now we're oriented. We're in a kitchen. We know the names of the people. His roomy eyes and hangdog look told her everything. That's some description. And it's a description from her point of view. So this is what she's seeing as she's looking at him. Okay. Still, she had to ask. And now we have a sense of inner tension. When somebody has to do something and they're reluctant to it, then there's clearly a sense of inner tension conveyed there. Okay, so that's a thoughts or an inner feeling. Out with Jim and Ed. Oh, where did you go? To the casino. Notice that there's not surround between every exchange, because that can get like a tennis match sort of. It can get kind of sing-songy. So some of them are just left to go. He couldn't meet her eyes. Again, this is from her point of view. It's description, but it tells us something about her emotional reaction. She kept her tone carefully neutral. Someone who's trying to keep their tone neutral, again, is under tension. Okay. And then we have her bits of thoughts. Go ahead, say it. Then there's action. He put a hand up to his face as if warding off a blow. Then we have a reaction to his action. The gesture broke her heart. I'd rather not. Say it. All right, we agreed that you were going to stop gambling. I know, but I went. More action. Finally, he raised his eyes to her and offered, and I won. Now we're in her thoughts again. He won. Oh, God, that only made it worse. Every time he won, he was convinced the next time he would win bigger, then bigger than that. House already double mortgaged, bank account empty, calls from creditors. These are thoughts, but they're also giving us some expository background as to how bad it is. And then it ends with an action. Turned your back and walked out. So the other narrative mode, the surround, give us a lot more than just the dialogue. But before you pick up the third one, I want to say something about it. Not a word of the dialogue has changed, although some of the punctuation has. On the third one, the dialogue is exactly the same, but the surround is different. Read it and see how differently the same dialogue looks with different surround. Okay, it's the same dialogue, but what has changed?
The point of view.
Now we have Paul. Paul, okay. And what else has changed?
She's no longer trying to help him. She's kind of a bitch, and he has serious anger problems, and basically they're on the road to something bad.
Okay. This one is a lot. The other one had tension. This one has downright hostility. It's broken out into downright hostility. Okay. What's different about Paul?
He's aggressive.
He's much more aggressive. He's not sitting there with a hangdog look anymore. Okay. And again, it's the same dialogue, but the surround is different. Take a closer look at it. It starts with his thoughts. First of all, it starts with a little orientation again, when Paul arrived in the kitchen, so we know where we are. He felt like 6 miles of bad road. Okay. So that's an internal reaction, an internal feeling. That's his thoughts, or his emotional feeling. Patty was frying eggs, action. It helps orient us, it helps see it, so that we can be that fly on the wall. We know what people are doing. She said, where were you last night? Out with Jim and Ed. The egg smell nauseated him. Again, we're establishing point of view and we're giving his inner feelings. He's a hungover and he's sort of a mess. Okay. Oh, where did you go? She said in that too casual, on the edge tone he hated. The same dialogue in the previous one was, she said quietly. And maybe she said it exactly the same way. But now it's his view of the dialogue. Okay. Paul groped for the aspirin, more action, to the casino. She slid her eggs onto a plate and threw the frying pan into the sink. Okay, two actions, but they reveal an emotional thing behind it, which is fury. I thought we agreed, never mind. Paul yanked the top off the aspirin bottle so hard little white tablets flew onto the counter and the floor. See, this is much better than saying Paul was angry, or Paul got angry at her now. We see his anger. We saw hers when she threw the frying pan. We see his. Again, and I can't say this often enough, people, we want to be the fly on the wall. We want to see your story. We want to see what's happening and draw the conclusions, be drawn into it. Okay. I'd rather not. Say it. He'd be damned if he'd let her get away with that holier-than-thou attitude. That tells us a lot about the backstory of their relationship right there. She has cast herself as the good guy and him as the bad guy. And maybe that's accurate, but he really resents it. Right. No, go ahead and say it. I'd rather not. Say it. Not her, who was so addicted to sugar that she'd ballooned up to 300 pounds. Where did she get off? Okay, so this is a defense mechanism. This is, I may be flawed, but so are you. It indicates, again, the depth of it, the resentment and hostility between the two of them, without actually saying it, because it's in his thoughts. Patty glared at him in action. All right, we agree that we're going to stop grumbling. I know, but I went. And he almost spit the words at that self-righteous face, and I won. Again, the self-righteous is his view of hers. It's not objective description. The way she was frying eggs is objective description. It's description seen through his point of view. Before I turn over the last one, exact same dialogue, but different surround. And this is the most psychologically complex of the four. Take a look at the last one. Step beyond simple denial.
She's in the neighborhood.
Yeah, this is a collusive relationship. There's a codependency going on here. And she is just as deeply, she's not the gambler, but she's just as deeply involved as he is. And again, it's the surround that makes the difference because the dialogue is the same. Where were you last night? Patty asked as Paul walked into the kitchen. Okay, again, just simple orientation. Who's present and where are we? Frying eggs at the stove. Again, what are they doing? Just helping us to visualize it. But this time she flashed him a smile over her shoulder. So the tone is immediately set is different. She's not angry. Out with Jim and Ed. Now it's his point of view, so we're in his thoughts. God, she looked pretty this morning. He liked that soft pink color of her robe. This again, she has flashed him a smile. He's responded with nice thoughts about her. So we have a sense that this relationship, unlike the other two, is not either tense and worried or outright hostile. There's something else going on. And that's by the end of the second paragraph, which is mostly dialogue. Out, where did you go? Expertly, she divided the eggs between two plates and buttered toast. Okay, remember, before it was her own eggs she slid onto the plate. Now, all of a sudden, they're sharing eggs here. To the casino. Patty stopped buttering. I thought we agreed. Never mind. This could go either way, we think, as we read it. No, go ahead, say it, he said, and at his gleeful tone. Okay, he's not upset about this. He's not angry. He's not ashamed, as he was in the previous two. Gleeful. I'd rather not, she said. Playing the game, he could always count on her. Suspense was sweetest when dragged out. This is our first clue that there's something more complex going on here than a simple one person on one side, one person on the other. Okay? Say it, he said. All right, her eyes shone. She intoned the words in the prissy style of their counselor, making him laugh. There's a lot going on in that sense. She's imitating somebody who is on the outside, and now it's two of them against the world, two of them against the counselor. And she's drawing him in with a laugh, and she's also putting down the counselor. By making it sound prissy, the counselor has now been diminished in their little world here. We agreed you weren't going to gamble anymore. I know, but I went and I won. And we end with action. Laughing, she was in his arms. Eggs were forgotten. Okay, now, this is why dialogue, although it should be at the heart of your scene, is not enough. Because the surround makes all the difference as to how we see your dialogue. Unless you have Meryl Streep or William Hurt reading your dialogue aloud for you, you're going to have to add this stuff. And this makes the surround just as important as the dialogue. This obviously is artificial. You don't construct a scene this way. You don't write all of the dialogue first and then go back and put the other stuff in. You do it at the same time. But we did it this way, took it apart, as it were, in the way a mechanic takes apart a car to see how the pieces run before, but you don't expect them to run separately. You only expect them to run together. But I wanted you to see that dialogue, for almost all of your scenes, when characters are interacting, should be the primary thing. They should carry most of what is happening. And the surround should color it and should give a sense of how we're supposed to look at this, as well as helping us to visualize it. And when I learned to do this, my scenes became much more vivid, and that made the difference for me between selling and not selling.
This podcast marks the end of our second year of free excerpts from Odyssey Lectures. If you've enjoyed these podcasts, I hope you'll consider visiting our website at www.odysseyworkshop.org and making a donation. Thank you. The text of this recording is copyright 2008 by Nancy Kress. The sound recording is copyright 2009 by Odyssey Writing Workshops.